Chapter 39. The Chinese junk looked like an antiquated relic amidst the modern freighters and container ships swarming about Incheon Harbor. Cussler carefully threaded the high stern sailing vessel through a maze of mid-morning commercial traffic before easing into a small public marina that was nestled between two large cargo docks. An odd assortment of beat-up sampans and expensive weekend sailboats encircled the marina as he motored the teak junk to a transit dock and tied up. He gave a quick knock on the spare cabin door to wake its slumbering occupants, then brewed a large pot of coffee in the galley as a marina employee refilled the junk's fuel tank. Summer staggered out into the sunshine of the aft deck, holding the dachshund in her arms, as Dirk followed a few steps behind, trying to suppress a yawn. Cussler threw a mug of coffee in their hands, then ducked below deck for a moment before emerging with a hacksaw in his grip. "Might be a good idea to offload those handcuffs before going ashore," he grinned. "I'll be only too happy to dispose of these bracelets," Summer concurred, rubbing her wrists. Dirk peered around the neighboring boats, then turned to Cussler. "Anybody follow us in?" he asked. "No, I'm quite sure we arrived alone. I kept a keen watch and zigzagged our course a few times just to be sure. Nobody seemed intent on following us. I bet those boys are still cruising up and down the Han River looking for you two," he laughed. "I sure hope so," Summers said with a shudder, stroking the small dog's ears for comfort. Dirk picked up the hacksaw and began cutting into the shackle on Summers' left wrist. "You saved our lives back there. Is there anything we can do to repay you?" he asked, while gliding the saw blade evenly across an edge of the handcuff. "You don't owe me anything," he replied warmly. "Just stay out of any more trouble and let the government take care of those hoodlums." "Can do," Dirk replied. After efficiently sawing through both of Summer's shackles, he relaxed while she and Cussler took turns cutting through his handcuffs. When the last shackle fell free, he sat up and downed the last of his coffee. "There's a phone in the marina restaurant you can use to call the American Embassy if you like. Here, take some Korean won. You can use it to make the call and buy a bowl of kimchi," Cussler said, passing Summer a few purple-colored bills of the national currency. "Thanks, Mr. Cussler. And good luck on your voyage," Dirk said, shaking the man's hand. Summer leaned over and kissed the old sailor on the cheek. "Your kindness was overwhelming," she gushed, then patted the dog goodbye. "You kids take care. Be seeing you." Dirk and Summer stood on the dock and waved goodbye as the junk eased out into the harbor, smiling as Mauser barked a final farewell from the bow deck. They made their way up a set of well-worn concrete steps and entered a faded yellow building that was a combination marina office, sundry store, and restaurant. The walls were draped in the traditional lobster trap and fishing net motif that sufficed for interior decorating in 1,000 seafood restaurants around the world. Only this one smelled like the nets were hung up while still dripping wet with salt water. Dirk found a phone on the wall in back and, after several failed attempts, completed a connection to NUMA headquarters in Washington. The NUMA operator required only minimal convincing before patching the call through to Rudy Gunn's home line, despite the late hour on the East Coast. Gunn had just dropped off to sleep but answered the phone on the second ring and nearly flew out of bed when he heard Dirk's voice. After several minutes of animated conversation, Dirk hung up the phone. "Well?" Summer asked. Dirk glanced towards the smelly restaurant with a look of adventure. "I'm afraid it's time to take the man up and sample some kimchi while we wait for a ride," he replied, rubbing his stomach with hunger. The hungry pair downed a Korean breakfast of hot soup, rice, tofu flavored with dried seaweed, and the omnipresent side dish of fermented vegetables, kimchi, which nearly blew smoke out of their ears from the spiciness. As they finished their meal, a bulky pair of U.S. Air Force security police strode sternly into the restaurant. Summer waved the two men over, and the senior of the two men confirmed their identity. "I'm First Sergeant Bimson, 51st Fighter Wing Security Forces. This is Staff Sergeant Rogers," he continued, nodding to his partner. "We have orders to escort you to Osan Air Base without delay." "The pleasure will be all ours," Summer assured him as they stood and left the marina restaurant, following the airmen to a government sedan parked outside. Though Seoul was actually a shorter distance to Incheon than Osan Air Base, Gun had elected to take no chances with their safety, ordering their transport to the nearest military base. The airmen drove south from Incheon, winding through mountainous hills and past flooded rice paddies before entering the sprawling complex of Osan, which started life as a lone airfield constructed during the Korean War. The modern base now hosted a large contingent of combat-ready F-16 fighter jets and A-10 Thunderbolt II attack planes deployed in the forward defense of South Korea. Entering the main gate, they traveled a short distance to the base hospital, where a fast-talking colonel greeted Dirk and Summer and led them to a medical examination room. After a brief checkup and treatment of Dirk's wounds, they were allowed to clean up and then given a fresh set of clothes. Summer laughed that the baggy military fatigues provided did nothing for her figure. "What's our travel situation?" Dirk asked of the colonel. "There's an Air Mobility Command C-141 bound from McCord Air Force Base leaving in a few hours that I'm holding a pair of first-class seats on. Your NUMA people have arranged a government aircraft to transport you from McCord to Washington, D.C. after you arrive. In the meantime, you are welcome to rest here for a bit, then I'll take you by the Officers Club, where you can grab a hot meal before jumping on that 20-hour plane ride stateside. Colonel, if we have the time, I'd like to contact an in-country special ops unit, preferably Navy, if that's at all possible. And I'd like to make a phone call to Washington." The Air Force Colonel's face turned up indignantly at Dirk's mention of the word Navy. "There's only one Navy base in the country, and that's just a small operations support facility in Chinhai, near Pusan. I'll send over one of our Air Force SO captains. As I think about it, there are SEALs and UDTs running in and out of here all the time. He ought to be able to help you out." 2 hours later, Dirk and Summer climbed aboard a gray Air Force C-141B Starlifter with a large contingent of GIs headed stateside. As they settled into their seats in the windowless transport jet, Dirk found an eye mask and pair of earplugs in the seat back in front of him. Donning the sleep aids, he turned to Summer and said, "Please don't wake me till we're over land. Preferably land where they don't serve seaweed for breakfast." He then pulled down the eye mask, stretched out flat in the seat, and promptly fell fast asleep.